The chances of that happening in the primary are greater. Yes, I do think that's been an issue for a long time. And what to me is so interesting, and I've been involved in this behind the scenes within the Republican Party several years back. The party itself, the state leaders, the on a county level, the precinct level, the local grassroots folks, they've been after this for years. Even the leadership of the South Carolina GOP, all of them have expressed support and have made an effort to try to get this done. But it is, you know, we had a lawsuit. It went to, you know, during the Obama administration, and, you know, it got kicked out. So it has to be done by the legislature, and they're not budging. No, because we don't have registration by party in this state. We don't have registration by party, so you can't specifically say this many Democrats showed. You can tell how many folks voted in the Democrat primary and how many folks voted in the Republican primary, but you never know which of those are registered because we do not have registration by party in this state. Registered to vote? Well, you may have joined a local party, which you can do. You can, you know, if you're a member, if you want to become a member of the Greenville County, Spartanburg County, Anderson County, Pickens County, whatever, the county level, you can become a member of the party, make a donation to them, and you will be on their list as a Republican supporter. But there is no registration by party in this state. Right. Yeah. Yes. I'm not following the question. What are you specifically asking?
So are we supposing, or do we know that the Democrats come in and
we're going to change this for you guys? We are supposing it is theory, because once again, you cannot get empirical data. Because we don't have registration by party.
Well, maybe we should have that too.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that would be a part of it.
Yeah.
Because you would have to register for that party in order to vote in that party's primary. Once you close the primaries. Because you would have to then say, okay, I have admitted to the state that I'm going to vote as a Democrat, so I only get to vote in the Democrat primary, and the converse true for the Republicans as well.
When I was talking about the bus tour yesterday.
Yes.
I was stricken by some of the textures that were out there, because, you know, we're talking about the SAVE Act, and
right.
But it's already illegal for illegal aliens to vote.
Exactly.
Yeah. And so
it's already illegal to speed, but many of us do anyway.
Well, yeah, but it's in the blue hellscapes, they are obviously breaking that law. They get out there, and even if you look for AI, if you go search and you're like, you know, do we need the SAVE Act? The AI is programmed to tell you, well, there's supposed evidence that there's voter fraud out there, but none that we can really lay our hands on and stuff like that. So
there is some truth to that, because once again, like in the state in South Carolina, you can't prove it empirically because you don't have the data.
Right.
But, you know, anyway.
But when you got the most illegal aliens in the United States in California.
Mm-hmm.
And you're doing that and you're counting them in the census.
And therein lies the problem that I have with this whole thing is that there's no reason why people who are not citizens of this country should be included in the calculations of representation with regard to the House of Representatives. It should not happen, because since you are not supposed to be voting, then it's once again, I have no problem counting the number of people within a defined geographical area. That's important. That's important data. We should know that. I understand that. However, when it comes to apportioning congressional districts, it should only be the voters that are counted.
And we need to make
citizens being, that are counted, rather.
Yeah, and we need to make being an illegal alien in the United States a very difficult thing.
Yeah, and we need to. I have for a long time, and I could be wrong about this. I think we need to make it easier to become a citizen, and harder to be here illegally. Now, once again, we have the, you know, the green card situation, the visas and all that stuff.
Yeah, but green card and people can't vote.
Well, exactly. But but I'm talking about from people being in this country without being a citizen. I have no problem with there being a legal way for this to happen. I understand that there are people that are going to maintain their citizenship with other nations that are going to be here for some extended period of times at some time. I mean, we can debate that. But once again, I just think we should make it easier to become a citizen here and harder to be here illegally, because that's the problem.
I think they should tax remittances.
And well, yeah.
Instead of giving them debit cards, we should probably take all the money they've got when they come across the border.
The whole concept of having benefits for people that are in the country illegally is ludicrous to me. I don't understand that. I understand the humanitarian desire from some to assist folks that may be in need of help. However, when you are spending thousands of dollars with coyotes or whatever organization gets you here,
yeah,
to come into this country illegally,
yep,
and then claim that you want to participate in the benefits, sorry, that just doesn't add up for me.
Especially when everybody here has to pay into most of them.
Well, that's it, yeah.
Medicare and all that other fun stuff that they get. In any event, you know, as soon as you come up with your policy, El Presidente, I am still your sergeant at arms.
I appreciate the support. I'm not sure I'm always right, but
well, but when you're the president, you don't have to be right. You just have to be definite.
Yes, that is true, and that's certainly the case we have with the current occupant of 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue.
Yeah, well, he's absolutely definite. That's the thing I like. He doesn't. He lays out his course, and he never goes back and says, "Well, on second thought, I was wrong." He never says that. And he shouldn't, because so far he hasn't been. But, you know, we move forward as we go. And we'll be doing El Presidente a couple more times, I hope.
Absolutely. I will make myself available for you as usual.
Outstanding. And when we get back, if your response to a tragedy is to mock God, my friend, you need to repent.
Mm-hmm. Amen to that.
This is 98.9 WORD. We now know that this spree killer wanted to kill children. He targeted children. That was a piece of evil right there. There was a piece of evil aberration against humanity. So, here we are. And on that day, hours after the transgender, the hated Christians opened fire, leftist Twitter identified a culprit. See, those children were praying. It's prayer that's the problem. And of course, Jen Psaki, or Peppermint Patty, as I remember calling her, she said, prayer is not freaking enough. Prayers do not end school shootings. Prayer does not bring these kids back. Enough with the thoughts and prayers. And then the outgoing Minneapolis Mayor Jacob Frey, don't just say this is about thoughts and prayers right now. These kids were literally praying. Dana Bash, forget about thoughts and prayers. The echo chamber is strong with these people. They're out there laughing at you for praying, much in the same way as everybody else was laughing at Christ when he was being crucified. Now, I do agree with all of these people that they are right about one thing. Prayer's not enough, because we shouldn't have had another school shooting since Columbine. I will always, that will always be my position on this. No sooner were we crashing jets on 9/11, but we were reinforcing the door and giving guns to the pilots and putting armed air marshals on there. That stopped. We have armed guards in banks. We have, we protect a lot of things. We don't protect kids. So, the implied argument is if prayer doesn't protect these young Christians from being killed, it must be useless or at least insufficient. this is where they lose the plot, I think. They lose the plot because they get out there and they think that if God's real, then he's going to make sure that you have that $5 you need for that cup of coffee. That, you know, that kind of material stuff. He fails to hold up his end of the bargain. Now, I get it. I get it. Every Christian who's ever experienced suffering, which is all of us, has wrestled with the question of why God does not prevent another tragedy, or every tragedy, or any tragedies. I'm sure the parents and the siblings and the grandparents and the friends and the victims are, they're all looking for answers now. And this is the thing. When you're facing evil, there are no answers for it, because most of us are just good. Evil is an anomaly among human beings. Plenty of it, don't get me wrong, but percentile-wise, it's not very prevalent. So when we are presented with it, it's a bit of a quandary for some people. Now, for these that are out there mocking and belittling prayers, or the prayers offered by loved ones and strangers mourning the tragedy, this indicates their complete misunderstanding about not just the power, but the purpose of prayer. The primary purpose of prayer is not about what you're wanting right now today. Please, God, give me 50 cents so I can buy some milk. However good, however simple, however pure it might be, it's not to get that granted. If it were, then every time we prayed, we would just get material stuff. It'd be like, you know, the Jim Carrey movie where everybody's prayers come true. And since he knows our wants already, he has no need for us to even ask for that. He can just do it. But that's not what that's about. This is us getting out there and rejuvenating our faith. Sticking close to the big man. Conforming to his likeness. Understanding our reliance on him. Oswald Chambers described prayer as the way that the life of God in us is nourished. It's not about getting things for yourselves, but that we may get to know God himself. So rejecting prayer because it's not answered in the way you hope, is that's a really zoomed in small view of things the way they go. Christ himself prayed for outcomes that the sovereign God declined to grant. The prayers we should be doing right now is we should be praying for all of these officials who have failed to take any action whatsoever to prevent this from ever happening. I've been talking a lot lately about after-action reviews. In the military, no matter what you do, no matter how big or small it is, they do an after-action review. And it has less to do with what you actually did and the result you got. More, it has to do with the preparation you made prior to this to make sure your mission was a success. This is why they referred to the field exercises we did as field problems. We'd be presented with a group of things that were issues that we would have to solve, like in a real combat situation. And we would do after-action reviews. They still do them today, even with combat and everything else. So, the after-action review for this particular church and that particular day was that they'd done nothing to protect the people in there. Nothing. They didn't want to. That it offended their sense of whatever. Because we can't have guns in the church. You not only should have guns in the church, you should have guns around the church. Because this guy was just like Devin Kelly. He didn't go into the sanctuary to start shooting kids. He shot through the windows like Devin Kelly did in Sutherland, Texas. Sutherland Springs. But there was no Stephen Williford there to repel him. So while all of these punks on the Democrat side are out there talking about prayer is not this and prayer is not that. Yes, let's pray for the families of the people who got hurt and murdered and hope that they find some peace. And let's pray to God that some of these people in charge understand exactly what it is that they've got to do, because they haven't been doing it. They have not been doing it. Absolutely take, you know, take comfort in the fact that those children killed have gone somewhere great. But that doesn't fill in the hole to know that for those parents. There is no closure for them. So pray for them. Yeah, pray for them. And, you know, we'll talk a little later on today about some of the steps that I would take if somebody put me in charge of something. Right now, Mark Elias, who if that name sounds vaguely familiar, he's the one that was primarily the conductor of the theft of the 2020 election. He's now suing to help the illegal aliens vote. This is News Talk 98.9 WORD. I really wonder. I wonder why the Democrats do what they do. For what reason? I mean, I know what they're angling for. They just want to be in control of every facet of your life. Every dollar you make. Every decision. Everything you consume. Everything you buy. They want to be in control of that. But the way they go about doing it is so transparent. And at the same time, they're throwing no policy out there. No program. No agenda. Beyond, well, we don't like Trump. Like this pilgrim, Mark Elias. The Elias Law Group is suing again, this time in Ohio, at a law aimed at blocking foreign nationals from voting in U.S. elections. Sort of like what the SAVE Act, the bus tour that we just had. And they want to strip election integrity protections that prevent non-citizens from voting. Now, why would you want to have non-citizens voting? Nowhere else on the planet does that happen. Just like nowhere else on the planet do they have mail-in ballots. Why would we be getting out there, and why would some leftist voters' right organization claiming that the state's new law requiring documented proof of U.S. citizenship, how does that threaten to disenfranchise thousands of eligible citizens who are non-citizens? They're not franchised at all. They're not enfranchised at all. They're here because they broke in. They're squatting. And you want them to vote. Why do you want them to vote, Democrats? Now, Red, Wine, and Blue and the Ohio Alliance for Retired Americans argue that the law included in the legislature's transportation funding bill violates the National Voter Registration Act and the U.S. Constitution. HB 54's new proof of citizenship requirement imposes unnecessary obligations to register to vote in violation of the NVRA. It violates the U.S. Constitution because it is impermissibly vague, giving no guidance as to what constitutes sufficient proof of United States citizenship. Actually, you know, I know exactly what it is. First of all, if one of your people that you're advocating for has a ticket to go see the immigration judge, that's a giveaway. See, one of the maddening realities is that when they come across the border, which most of the, you know, nothing's happening now. Everything out there now has just been on idle. Because there's no encounters on the border anymore. Because we closed down the border. Because we could. And we should have. But now the going to court slip, the ticket you get. And for all of you that think, oh, well, why aren't the Sheriff's Department doing this? And why aren't they doing this in Spartanburg County every time the buses drop people off? Because by law, when they get that court slip saying they're going to be at court, going to court, unless they break another law, besides the one that they got the court slip for, there is no law
that allows law enforcement to do anything. Some of you, well, they should be doing more. Well, no, they can't. We don't want law enforcement making it up as they go. We don't. We really don't. So these guys are gaming the system. They're taking the system, and they've turned the slip into the green card. Now, it's a green card. They're eligible citizens now because they got to go to court to make their proof, which, you know, if they actually go to court, they're probably going to be found in, is, you know, all right, well, thank you very much. Get on the bus. Now, the reason for the SAVE Act and the reason for this HB 54 is that the current law is not, the current laws are not being followed. And this is where the quandary begins for me, because Donald Trump has proven that you can get out there and just follow the laws as they are, right? And get what you want done. We don't have to have more and more and more laws. I saw something on Facebook today that says we have 10,000 pages of laws written because we can't follow the 10 on the stone tablet. We've got redundant laws, and these are redundant laws we're doing. But I think that some people think it is necessary in order to make the law stick, because the current law apparently is not being made to stick. Now, last month, U.S. District Judge Scott Skavdal found the leftist group that Elias was representing in a similar lawsuit in Wyoming lacked standing. And this must have stung, because Skavdal is an Obama appointee. He ruled that the election integrity deniers had no business challenging HB 156, which, like Ohio's law, requires prospective Wyoming voters to provide documentary proof of citizenship and residency when registering to vote in the state. But I mean, hey, I got a great idea. If you have the ID that it takes to get a passport, welcome to America. An American passport. Not your passport. Not the Mexican passport. And not the Guadalajara or the Guatemalan. None of that. None of that stuff. I just said Guadalajara. That's not even a country. Not the Guatemalan. All of this is in boilerplate language from a Democrat Party abetting law firm opposed to basic protections against non-citizens registering and voting in U.S. elections. Which, they're actually illegal aliens. They're criminals. Criminals! Now, Chip Roy is the lead sponsor of the SAVE Act, and he's calling this fear-mongering they're peddling out there the most absurd narrative. It all comes down to one thing. Politicians and game in the system. Now, the Democrats are as determined to be in charge as sometimes it seems like the Republicans are as determined to mess things up. And, you know, if anybody wants to sit around out there and say, well, you know, Bill, election stuff, it doesn't, there's not any fraud going on. Just remember that if it weren't, the reason Trump won, besides the tsunami of voters that came out for him, and besides the coalition that he built out of a bunch of disenfranchised Democrats who just want to live their lives like you and I do, the reason Trump won was because of the ground game. Because they were trying to steal this election. They fully expected to steal this election, because they stole the last one so easily. But we didn't have Rona McDaniel sitting in the back of one of the limousines that she had leased for the election season, trying out the champagne selection. We had some people actually doing things, and we had a ground game going on, and we had things being kicked back, like the 49,000 voters in Detroit that accounted for 280,000 votes. We got that kicked back. So Democrats steal elections. They steal them. They've been stealing them from Bernie Sanders for a long time. They're aware of the optics of Bernie Sanders. They don't want Bernie Sanders to be out front. So, and the sad thing for Bernie is when they look at Hillary Clinton and Joe Biden and say, these two are so much better than Bernie. And then they steal the election for him. I don't know, dude. You might want to think about who you're caucusing with. Because they don't have the same respect for you that you seem to have for them. Now, Florida's still fresh out. They still sting from Parkland. They've come up with a new idea to deal with school shooters that I'm not really sure is a smoking hot idea. This is News Talk, 98.9 WORD. Now, if you want to deter a school shooter, there has to be a high degree of probability that they will be perforated before they do all of their Facebook social media shenanigans that they're looking to do. And there is a very plain, easy way to do that. But technology is not necessarily the answer. And the Florida school districts, where the Parkland attack occurred, they haven't figured that out yet. So Newsweek is reporting that several school districts in Florida are taking on technology-based approaches to combat the threat of school shootings. And they're going to put out a drone response system that aims to confront and subdue an assailant. Tim, have you ever flown a drone?
Yes, I have.
Now, are they very agile when you're like, if you're like facing Mike Tyson, can you keep the camera? Just keep the camera on Mike Tyson.
Yeah, if you know how to fly one.
Yeah, but what about if it gets behind the drone?
If what
is the drone that agile to where it can deal with somebody? And it'd have to be a pretty big drone to be taken on a school shooter.
Well, yeah, I mean, of course. But I mean, they use drones in military settings too, don't they?
Yeah, but they're using drones to engage from a long way away. They're not out there going hand to hand with them.
Yeah, right, right.
This isn't like Robbie the robot.
Yeah, I mean, you have to know how they are pretty intricate in like trying to fly them.
Yes, and
in fact, they actually have classes on it. You can take classes on
the biggest issue,
certifications and license for them.
The biggest issue I've ever had flying a drone is just the periphery because you don't have peripheral vision with it.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you're not aware of cables coming up or something, you might fly right into them. This is coming from somebody called Campus Guardian Angel. And as you look at their stuff and everything, this is, you know, it doesn't actually show the drone. It's just, I don't know. They're hiring professional drone racers, military veterans, and former law enforcement officers to combat school shooters with an on-campus drone piloted from a surveillance hub in Austin, Texas. So this must be a really serious drone here.
He piloted it from Houston, Texas?
Yeah, and it looks like a big DJI drone.
What?
It looks like a big DJI drone. It's a quadcopter.
Yeah, yeah.
So the only problem is it would have to be bulletproof, which makes it really heavy. They claim that the drone can confront the shooter within 15 seconds. And when not in use, they're stored on a charging pad across the campus and are remotely piloted by a team of employees in Austin.
Yeah, I mean, like, you'd have to armor that thing up.
Yep. They would have to have a bunch of these drones on each campus. They revealed that the company places between 30 to 90 drones in every school.
That's a lot. That's going to be a lot of money, too.
They can reach an indoor speed of up to 50 miles per hour, and they're equipped with a glass breaker to help navigate through potential obstacles. They're non-lethal. They carry pepper spray pellets designed to blind or slow down attackers. So it's a flying burn a gun.
You said 50. They're going to have like 50 of them?
30 to 90.
30 to 90.
It flies 50 miles per hour indoors. 50.
Bro,
indoors.
How much money is that going to cost? Bro, like, they are expensive. Like, drones are very expensive. So, I mean, I'm just saying that's going to be a lot. And you're talking about armor, like bulletproof armor and everything. There's a lot of weight.
Well, it doesn't say that they are.
But I would imagine in order to keep from being shot out of the air.
Yeah, you would have to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, I mean, it seems like something that heavy would just make better sense just to ram into him versus spraying pepper spray at him.
Yeah, and can't you load it down with – well, I guess you couldn't. That would add more weight to it, like adding weapons and, like, make it able to shoot.
Well, then you don't have periphery then. You don't want to be – you don't want to be – on the ground firing things lethal at anything if you don't have the periphery.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
And, you know, on the text line, yeah, I know they have wide angle views and night vision and everything, but I don't think these particularly would be set up with that.
Well, drones were originally used for recon.
Sure, so. And that in that role, I could see popping one up.
Yeah.
But then again, you've already got closed circuit television. In Ohio, they have a program called the FASTER program. And the FASTER program is about arming teachers, volunteers. They arm teachers, and they are trained by law enforcement. They're trained in combat trauma, and they have to recertify every year. See, and they have communications, and they have the closed circuit televisions. Only the cops know who they are. They're volunteers. It costs nothing because they do all the training for free, and now. They also have a school resource officer. They have two of these teachers on each hallway. So each hallway goes from being a hallway to a murder tunnel if a rampage shooter is in the school.
See, I'm for that. I mean, as a husband of a teacher, I'm totally for that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I want to know, and you know, so like if they've got 90 drones on there, are they going to roll all 90 of them if they find out that how are they going to know which one is the closest?
Could you imagine that sound, though?
What happens if they have spectrum and the internet goes out?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because do they use internet to fly those? I guess
they have to.
Well, yeah, I guess they would have to have that many. Yeah.
What if it happens? What if an attack happens in a school bus or on a playground?
Be asking the school the Wi-Fi password.
Yep.
What's the Wi-Fi password?
Yeah. Getting out there. For all of us that were here for Hurricane Helene, we know how well that we want to rely on Wi-Fi for everything we've got.
Exactly.
This is a high-tech digital solution to an analog problem. Arm the teachers. You won't be sorry. Arm the teachers.
Yeah, I would say that's the most effective way to handle it.
One of the biggest problems the Democrats have now is that they cannot persuade you to vote for them, which is why every one of their states is gerrymandered to their eyeballs. That in just a second. This is News Talk 98.9 WORD.